This is from the HuffingtonPost.com. Thinking the unthinkable, Russia has re-emerged as a great power. The Western image of Russia and Putin in recent years has been very negative. President Obama, or Barry Saturo as I like to call him, has publicly called Vladimir Putin, quote, a schoolboy who slouches in his chair in the back of the room, and derided his country as a mere regional power. So it might have been found to be false. But wouldn't it be great if he had actually said this? Quote, negotiating with Obama is like playing chess with a pigeon. The pigeon knocks over all the pieces, craps on the board, and then struts around like it won the game. That would be just like Barry. End quote. This begs the question, how Russia could again become a major power after the disintegration of the Soviet Union in 1991? How could Putin do this without an agrarian or consumer revolution and with the massive drop in the price of oil?
People must not fall victims to businesses' ambitions and greed. That's what Russia's prime minister said while visiting a town in northern Russia, which has turned into a battlefield between workers and business owners. And, surprisingly, it took just a few hours before people started to receive long-owed salaries into their bank accounts.
People have been waiting for quite a long time, but months of uncertainty without money and hope have thrown them onto the streets. A policeman tries to start negotiations, but he fails to persuade the crowd. Protesters say they no longer believe a single word. They want action.
We want money. We want jobs.
Pikhalova is a typical Russian monogorod. The local economy and budget and thousands of jobs are all dependent on a single industry. And when one day the economic crisis made it stop doing anything, it's affected every single family. We visited the town a month ago when the first protests took place. Then the head of the local trade union warned that angry and hungry people could go further. It seems today that she wasn't so far from truth. But on Thursday, the situation reached breaking point. Vladimir Putin arrived to meet the plant's owners and local authorities. His voice was determined.
To those responsible for what has happened, I'd like to say, I think thousands of people fell victim to your arrogance, unprofessional behavior, and possibly even trivial greed. This is totally unacceptable.
The Prime Minister has ordered all salaries owed to workers to be paid immediately. He also insisted agreements be signed aimed at reviving local industry.
Did you sign this contract? Did Oleg Vladimirovich sign it? Why don't I see your signature? Come here and sign it. Come to me. This contract over here. And now give me my pen back.
Earlier, Russia's State Duma Committee on Social Policy suggested nationalization. If this measure is approved, Pikhalova could become the first such case in Russia's modern history.
Pikhalova is just one of so-called monogorods in Russia. Many were created across the country during the Soviet planned economy, and they all are suffering these days. And the future of these towns will depend on how authorities deal with this particular case.
If Putin is a terrible leader, then how can you explain successful interventions in Georgia in 2008, Crimea in 2014, Ukraine 2014-16, and Syria 2015-16? Putin, however, is actually a very shrewd leader, with a brilliant foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, who relies on a capable foreign ministry. Putin has rebuilt Russia's military capability by spending $49 billion a year on security. Russia retains 1,790 strategic nuclear weapons, with over 140 million people and 30 million college graduates. Russia has nearly a million first-class scientists, engineers, and technicians, most of whom work for the military. Many former great powers are now no longer major powers. Japan, which smashed the Russian army in the 1904 Sino-Japanese War, occupying much of China from 1937 to 1945 and has a $4 trillion economy, is no longer a great power. After its defeat in World War II, capped by the American dropping of atomic bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and American post-war occupation, Japan has sworn off further intervention in the world and refused to acquire nuclear weapons. Europe, which once teemed with great powers such as Germany, France, England, and Austro-Hungary, now has gone in another direction. Germany soundly beat the Russians in every World War I battle and came close to doing the same in 1941 and 42. Today, with weak power projection, the three main powers have less than 1,000 mainline battle tanks and few aircraft carriers. Weak economic growth, 1.5% per year, disputes amongst its 28 members, migration from the Middle East, serious problems with weaker members such as Greece, promote domestic over international issues. China, with its $10 trillion GDP, over $2 trillion of exports, over $3 trillion in its reserve fund, 1.35 billion people, and 3.7 million square miles of territory, is a future great power. It's made huge economic progress since Deng Xiaoping launched the four modernizations in 1978. Yes, its remaining problems are staggering. Enormous air pollution, 675 million peasants, huge governmental corruption, authoritarian one-party dictatorship, lack of rule of law, rapidly aging population, hundreds of thousands of children raising themselves, and only $7,500 GDP per capita. Its military, while boosted by $150 billion of spending, still needs another decade to become a truly modern force. India has 20% illiteracy, 3 million people without electricity, and a $1,300 GDP per capita that is less than 3% of the United States. It faces Pakistan with 200 atomic bombs. India, with over a billion people, will be a major power, but not for several decades. Then there is the United States, the sole global superpower since victory in the Cold War, and one of two superpowers in the world since 1945. Its $18 trillion economy, 17 of the world's top 20 universities, world leadership in high technology, over $550 billion in military spending, and 330 million people give it serious advantages over Russia. But with the rise of popular neo-isolationist presidential candidates, the slowest economic recovery since the Great Depression, decline in its manufacturing sector, administration talk of reducing the size of the American military to the 1940 level, and the Obama semi-withdrawal from the Middle East, the door that had been shut to Russia has been opened. The unthinkable has become a reality. Russia, seemingly finished after its defeat in the Cold War, now is emerging as a prospective great power challenging the West. Russia has done the unthinkable, become a great power, filling the void left by other former great powers that have now shrunk in size, power, and influence. And in our case, that's down to our membership of the European Union, because everything is controlled by them. Our military, our government, our economy, our exports, our imports, everything. That's why Britain is no longer a superpower. And that's why, on June 23rd, we have to vote no and get out of this corrupt, vile, evil, fascist dictatorship called the European Union. And let's trade and do business and visit with our friends and partners across 22 miles of water, just on our own terms, rather than on the terms of some faceless bureaucrat sitting in Brussels, wondering what to control next. The flavour of our crisps, perhaps? The amount of power we can use to dry our clothes in a tumble dryer? They've already limited vacuum cleaners. So why not?